Welcome to Inside Analog Photography Radio Program. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. And of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is all about traditional process photography. We talk about instant photography. We talk about black and white. We talk about color film. We talk about dry plate, wet plate, you name it, alternate printing processes, everything going on in analog photography. And of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is brought to you by Fujifilm over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. They have beautiful C41 color neg, black and white, color chrome, and of course, instant. Instant film rocks. These guys have so much great things going on right now with instant film. Of course, they have the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4.5. Color, black and white, high-speed black and white. But you know what's even cooler? They have the Instex cameras and film. The Instex Wide is in the country, available everywhere. And of course, right now, brand new, the Instex Mini is now in the U.S. They have cameras. They have film. This Instex Mini is 2.5 by 3.5. It's the size of a business card. This is really fun stuff. You got to check it out. www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, the place to send all your film to get developed, proofs, you name it. They got a great workflow going. www.richardphotolab.com. DR5 for the most unbelievable proprietary process to turn your black and white film into positives, into chrome. You won't believe until you get your film back as a piece of chrome will blow your mind. The dynamic range, the latitude, it's just unbelievable stuff. Definitely check it out. www.dr5.com. Iger Studios, Lenny Iger, the place to have high-resolution scans done. You know, a lot of people now are shooting analog. They're using a high-resolution scan. They're making digital negatives on an inkjet, or maybe they're going straight to an inkjet output, but they're making digital negatives and they're printing contact prints. They're doing all the stuff you need to get a high-resolution scan. They're using an Aztec Premier, 8,000 PPI, adjustable aperture. They can give you scans that are basically grain-free. They can adjust it for every kind of film out there. This is crazy stuff going on with Lenny Iger and the guys at Iger Studios. Check them out, igerstudios.com. And of course, Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. The camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder. Our media partners, www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group. The place on the web for all things analog process. This is a great place to learn, to share information, to get tips and tricks. The community for analog photography, www.apug.org. And of course, our photographic philanthropy partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, www.geh.org. The place to go to find out about the history of traditional analog photography. These people are keeping this alive. They have over 7,000 cameras in the museum of everything that's ever been made, including the Hasselblads that were shot on the moon. You name it. They have the collection. This is a great way to help support. You can be a member of George Eastman House organization. They have a lot of great things going on, but this is something you can do to help give back to photography, to help keep traditional analog photography alive for generations to come. Definitely check them out, www.geh.org. And today we're going to have with us Matt Slaby. Matt is a professional photojournalist that travels the country worldwide. Of course, he shoots digital because of his workflow, but he also takes with him a Polaroid camera with Fuji instant pack film, and he shoots cool stuff at inaugurations, at political conventions. Matter of fact, one of his Fuji instant photographs just ran in U.S. World News and Report. A lot of great stuff going on with Matt. So today we're going to talk to Matt about his photography, his analog background, and his love for instant photography, of course, using this high-speed Fuji black and white. Matt, how you doing today?
Good, Scott. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program today and talk about your excellent photography and all this cool stuff you're doing.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
So, Matt, tell us, you're a photojournalist doing all kinds of stuff for all kinds of media outlets all across the country. Give us a little background on currently what you're up to.
I work as a commercial and editorial photographer out of Denver, Colorado. Work with a larger cooperative of photographers called Luceo Images, which is a group of six photographers from the United States, Southeast Asia, and Latin America.
So, Matt, tell me some of the outlets that you're shooting for. I know you've done stuff for U.S. News and World Report. I know you've done a lot of political coverage. Tell me what your typical jobs are.
It ranges from all of the news and culture magazines, so Newsweek, Time, U.S. News and World Report, different music magazines, some smaller niche cultural places. I just got back from a shoot for Audubon Magazine, which is the magazine of the Audubon Society, and then other commercial stuff related to that. Recently, a couple of shoots for the Latina Initiative here, as a nonprofit immigration advocacy group here in Colorado. It's like any other job. It's one piece at a time and one client at a time.
So tell me how Matt got involved in photography. Is this something that you were doing as a kid, maybe in high school? Tell me what got you into photojournalism.
Accident, I guess. I mean, my background is not per se in photography. I'm literally colorblind. So I was working for an ambulance company a number of years ago, and I came off of a shift in the morning. Had a small paycheck, and I went into a camera store and figured if I could get a black and white darkroom set up for a couple $100, I'd do it, and taught myself that. The short move from there, somewhere in between that job and a couple other jobs and pursuing grad degree, went back, tried to get into school just to learn color photography out of curiosity. I sat through one class with Kevin Maloney, who's a contract photographer for the New York Times, to learn color photography, and it more or less changed the direction of my life. Within 10 minutes of the class, I realized that this is where I belong, this is what I enjoyed doing, and it sort of fit all of my interests into one box. And that was, I guess, the start of the story.
So let's talk about doing color photography and being colorblind. Does this have anything to do? Does it even matter at all when you're doing your photography?
I guess I don't think about it too much because it's the only way that I've ever seen. So I would imagine for other people, it's like looking through sunglasses in the sense that you generally know what colors you're looking at, but sometimes you can get them confused. So the only times that it ever comes up for me is when there's a color cast that I absolutely can't see. But the client will catch it right away, and it's something that I can correct out. It's maybe 1 out of 100 shoots, something like that comes up. Because over time, I figured out that different times of day, different light, casts a different color over everything, and you can correct out based on number and white balance. So technology saves my color blindness, I believe, best of my knowledge.
Are you still shooting a lot of black and white? I know that mainly for really most photojournalists, when you're out covering stories for different outlets, that everybody wants digital, but I know that you're still shooting analog. So are you still shooting some analog black and white? What's your mix of digital versus color versus black and white?
Most of the clients that I'm working with right now, with a couple of exceptions, are asking for digital. The Polaroid fits into that, and this Polaroid project has fit into that sort of as a side note. So I carry one of the three different just complete junker analog land cameras. I'm from the 70s, a 250, a 350, and a 450, and there's no reason for any one of those. It's just what I found sitting around for $10. So I carry those with me to the assignments and to different stuff that I'm shooting, and I kind of have a separate idea of what I'm after. And I'm shooting for theme and for a broader essay, a longer-term project with those cameras. So, for example, at political conventions or inauguration, I'm shooting assignment work. I'm shooting for news and for story and for magazine essay with the digital camera. And then with the Polaroid, trying to shoot something that's a little bit slower, a little bit more timeless, and where it has that feel to it that's so much different than what you get out of digital.
Let's talk about this Polaroid project. So I know that at one point you had borrowed a Hoga back from a buddy of yours to shoot on your Hoga with some old 80 series square Polaroid, and it just sort of took off from there. What's your big interest and what do you like about the instant Polaroid type photography? We'll talk about later here what kind of stock you're using, but what do you dig about this instant photography?
I borrowed the Hoga back from Michael Rubenstein, who's a photographer in Mumbai, India right now. Really talented photographer over there, does quite a bit of film work. But I was up in Portland, he loaned me a back to fit onto a Holga and just ran 10 quick square portraits through it. I mean, really, without ever having shot through a Holga or shot Polaroid before, the thing that this kind of film does is it slows down your approach to the picture. It makes you more patient with your subject. Digital has a sense that everything is disposable. But if you don't get it on one frame, that you've got a sort of a bottomless pit of frames that you can work out of to get that. So it encourages you not to pay as much attention to your subject as you should and just kind of fire through, and then you go back and rethink it after the fact. When you have 10 frames, when your frames are coming out at over $1 a piece, it's something that if you're going to shoot for any length of time with, you want to be judicious and you want to slow down your approach and pay attention to your subject and wait for that one frame, as opposed to kill 20 frames trying to get there. So that's what I figured out immediately after those first 10 frames through the Holga. After that, I picked it up slowly, but started to develop a small body of work that carried a bigger theme, and over time developed into a pretty substantial chunk of photographs.
So you're using these older style Polaroid gigs. What are you using for acquisition material now? Because, of course, Polaroid's done. And, I mean, there's a few things out there here and there. But what are you using for your stock? Do you like to shoot color, black and white? What types of instant film are you shooting?
The film that's almost exclusively going through the camera is Fuji 3000 black and white. It's a 3000 speed pack film that goes into these old Land cameras, and they're still producing it.
Isn't the 3000 black and white very cool stock? I mean, it just has such a unique image to it. There's such a high contrast and such low latitude. It's a challenge, but it's fun stuff.
Right, and with these cameras, I've gathered, have two aperture settings and that magical eye that chooses your exposures. So there's sort of a slow method to figuring out how you're going to trick the camera into giving you the image that you want. It's much less control than you have normally, but once you get familiar with the film and the camera, you can start to hone the results that you get. And then every now and then something happens with the film or a jam or something that textures over the image or adds just that little extra accidental piece to the final product.
So you typically have one of these Polaroids with you wherever you're at?
Every day, all day.
Wow. Now, what do people say when you're shooting with your new cool guy digital stuff and then you pull out this Polaroid?
It has the bellows on the front. And I don't know. People are nostalgic about it, especially folks that I think lived through those cameras and the Polaroid advertisements and when they were at the peak of their production. So, I mean, I photographed a veteran from Vietnam who told me all about how his parents had sent him over the very camera that I had over to Vietnam. And he made pictures of his tour with the very same camera. The thing about Polaroid, I guess it's similar in a sense to the digital workflow in that it's ubiquitous and that it's accessible and it's immediate. The difference being, though, is that unlike digital where you just kind of click through it on the back of a camera and you can erase it with one button, that it's a physical product. And once it's shot, it's sort of there. It's permanent. You put it in your pocket. You put it in an album. You put it in the stack. But they don't disappear, I guess.
No, and I think they archive a lot better than digital because 40, 50 years from now, you can open up a shoebox with Matt's convention photography in it, and it's going to look pretty good. And I hope about 40 years from now, if there's even such thing as a Winchester-based hard drive, I can even plug it in anywhere. Instant photography is cool. Like you said, there's something about it that, I don't know, it's just so unique, and it has the immediacy of digital, but it's better. You have a print. That's why I think the biggest problem with digital is not the technologies, but you shoot it, you see it on the screen, but you don't have a print. And you really don't have a photograph until you have a print in your hand.
And you can share it. So a lot of the pictures, especially early on, a lot of the pictures that I was shooting, I'd hand to the person that I shot it to, give them one, and then take one for myself. I guess you arguably you lose your product there, but there's something really nice about being able to share something like that with people immediately, especially in photography where so much of what we're doing is going in somewhere, literally taking stuff away, taking experience away, joining people at moments that they don't necessarily want us there, or we're being intrusive. And the Polaroid is an interesting way to be able to give back to somebody immediately. It's not a print that you send to them 4 months down the road. It's right there for them at that moment.
Are you shooting any color stock or mainly all of the FP3000B?
Are you talking about through the Polaroid?
Yeah.
Not really. A couple of packs through it. I guess I'm really focused when I work on something. Once I get a project or I get an idea in my head, I kind of try to go into it as much as I can. So sticking with one kind of film and sticking with one approach over a long period of time produces a body of work that I feel is cohesive. And I'm almost afraid to start putting other kinds of film into it in the sense that I'd probably latch onto that just as strongly. So it's another expense, it's another body of work, and it may take away from the project that I'm working on right now.
So are you carrying a meter with you when you're shooting the Polaroid stuff? Or are you relying on what still works with inside of the happy electronic eye and the old Land camera? How are you exposing for this stuff or using your digital as more of a meter when you're out shooting the Polaroid stuff too?
On these particular cameras, they only made, I think it's a 195, and I want to say a 180 or a 190, I don't recall. I believe there's only two of the Land cameras that have full manual controls. So these cameras, again, they have an indoor and an outdoor aperture, and then the magic eye that adjusts your shutter. And so, I mean, I have a meter with me. I don't use it with this stuff. It's like any kind of film. Once you put enough film through the camera, you start to know the capabilities of the film, the latitude of the film. If you're shooting directly into the sun, you know how it's going to respond to that versus if there's flare. Your lighting conditions, you kind of get it into your head what the camera will do and won't do. And the stuff that it absolutely won't do, I don't shoot. But it's remarkably spot on most of the time.
Yeah, and this is beautiful photography. I mean, if you go to your website, the best place to go to look at the Fuji Instant stuff is over at your main site, correct?
There's two places you can go and find the images. The first one would be mattslaby.com, MATTSLABY.com. And the other place would be on my cooperative site at luceoimages.com. That's LUCEOIMAGES.com. Likely within the next month or two, the edits that appear in both of those places will start to come together in one body of work. The way that it's broken down right now is the conventions are one particular piece of work. There's another sort of a more experimental portraiture set that fills in to another. The direction that the project has taken over the last couple of years, it really focuses on Americana, on these things that are sort of ubiquitous and unique to, I guess, being in the States at this particular time. And then there's a way to make it timeless through the Polaroid. So that's sort of the thesis that I'm taking, and the new edit will reflect that.
No, it's great stuff, and especially I love the series here on Gun Culture USA. It's just so Americana. It's good stuff.
That's all digital, and then there's another set. If folks go to my archive, which is available through the search bar on my website, it's also archive.madslaby.com. There's another series of Polaroids from some of those shoots that I've done that fit in. I don't fit in with the color project, but they fit in with the Polaroid project.
Now, do you have a thought of having the Polaroid stuff using this high-speed ISO 3000 Fuji instant film? Are you looking to put together a book with this? Going to do some gallery displays? What's your thoughts on showing this stuff to the world besides the website? Do you have any goal there to push this stuff a little further?
I think another year or two of shooting, it'll be at the phase where it's ready to start talking about a book. I've got a couple of different museums that I'm talking with right now about doing shows that are specific to this body of work. And again, specific to that thesis that this is Americana and that that's what these photographs show. Those avenues are open and will probably be more finalized as we get towards fall.
Do you find that no matter what you're out doing editorial-wise, if you're at the White House or if you're at a political convention or who knows where you're out in the middle of a field somewhere, typically you've been able to find images that relate to this instant project, this Polaroid project that you're doing?
Yeah, I think part of what critics have made about photography over the years is that photographers are drawn to particular things. And they're not drawn to other things. And I think that's true for me as much as it is for everybody else. The thing that's unique about the Polaroid, especially right now, when our workflow and sort of our cultural understanding of photography is currently on this disposable digital image, Polaroid allows you to sort of slow down your viewer too and point out something that they may pass over if they're going through 5 million digital images of the same thing. So there's a picture everywhere. There's no doubt about that. I don't know if I'm answering your question exactly.
No, you are. I mean, like you said, there's a picture everywhere, but there's not really a photograph everywhere. And I think that's the thing that is a problem with digital photography. You can make some beautiful images with it. But the problem is most people don't do anything with those images. They end up being stuck on a memory card somewhere. People either end up deleting them so they can have more photos to stick on that card, or they stick them on a hard drive. They never go anywhere. I mean, when you have an instant photograph and you take this Fuji film and you pull it open, it's like this big surprise when you get it. But you actually have this print. And like you said before, you're sharing it with people. You're out shooting somewhere. You pop a couple of those off and you hand one to someone. You made their day.
It draws a very distinct box around whatever you're looking at in a way that gives people reason to pause on something. So, I mean, I guess in one sense, everywhere you go, there is a picture to be made. It's something ordinary that you can sort of bring out and make extraordinary just by putting those brackets around it. In another sense, it still goes with that big asterisk that photographers are drawn to particular subjects, and edits and bodies of work tend to reflect those choice things. It's hard to flex those boundaries sometimes.
Sure. So what do you want to do, Matt, that you haven't had a chance to do? I mean, I know that you grew up and got your teeth in photography with shooting black and white. I know you still shoot a little bit of chrome here and there, so you're still doing some other analog capture. Of course, with the way that editorial photography is now, you have to shoot digital. Or what are you going to tell a client? Well, I'll get you this stuff after I soup it for you. Let me do it in the car real quick. So you have to shoot digital, but what are you looking forward to as a photographer moving forward, as a project, as a different medium? Is there anything that you're looking forward to besides shooting all this really cool instant?
Well, that's a tough question.
It is when you think about it. I mean, what are you looking forward to? Are you more happier when you're starting to pop off and pulling out Fuji film out of your Polaroid? Or is it like, cool, I got another gig to get, I'm going to go make some more dough? Is there a project maybe that has been boiling for a while that's time to show its head? What are you thinking about here moving forward?
being in business as a photographer is an interesting place for me to be. So I think about it as two different boxes that I work in. The first box is business mode, which is sales and marketing and bookkeeping and doing all of that stuff. It's independent of the product that I produce, of the project or the quality of the project that I produce. So it's looking at being able to pay my mortgage and eat food. But I'm careful when I approach my projects that they don't overlap. So when I'm shooting, all of those considerations go somewhere else, if that makes sense. I don't want bottom line profit motive to be driving the kind of things that I'm interested in photographing and the places and the people that I'm interested in photographing. It's just art, imagery, journalism, storytelling, whatever it is, all relies on some element of truth and some element of sincerity that if you overlap those boxes, I don't think fit together very well. So looking, honestly, the next project or the next piece for me, I believe it's going to focus on place from Colorado. I've worked around the western United States. I worked with the Forest Service on a hotshot crew, on a fire crew for a number of years. And have traveled all over the West from Montana down to Arizona, then all the way west to California from different big fires. All of these little places and pockets of culture that are unique to the stuff that I know is lately what I've been drawn to photographing, and what I'm interested in representing is being culturally viable and the sort of centric notion of culture that we have in the United States, which is LA, New York, and that those are the hubs of everything good and we're all stuck in between. I've been up in Wyoming photographing rodeo, and to me, the culture that goes along with that and the way that people approach that is valuable and interesting as a project. That makes sense?
Sure, it's definitely true, and I think that that's a good thing to look at that a lot of people don't concentrate on. Because like you said, they're concentrating on LA, New York, Chicago, Miami, Dallas, but they're not in Wyoming checking out guys that are doing rodeo. I mean, there's so many things here to be able to grab and capture. It's countless. And sometimes I think as a photographer, it's hard to get a focus sometimes because there is so many cool things to do. What do you turn to next? It's like a kid in a candy store. Everywhere you turn, there's like, wow, I want to do this project. Let's do this. I think it's hard to concentrate down and pick things. And you've been able to pick some really cool projects here that have turned out beautiful.
Well, thank you. I mean, I feel like as an industry, we're driven to sort of push people towards those areas. Move to New York and that's how you become a photographer. Move to LA and become a photographer. I don't want to completely badmouth digital age, digital workflow, because the one thing that we're fortunate enough to have right now is the ability to have a different kind of model, which means I can remain in Colorado and I can remain in the Mountain West. I can do my work out here. I can contact all of my buyers directly. I have a cell phone. I have a computer. We have sat phones. We have the ability to transmit and to market directly and to be in touch with buyers in a way that in the past nobody ever has been able to. Which makes going to those places a little less relevant and makes remaining at the hub of whatever your interests are a little bit more accessible and easy. I'm staying in Colorado.
No, this is cool. Is there any kind of other gear you're looking to expand your instant photography with? Any kind of different older cameras you're thinking about? Or are you pretty well set with the stuff you got and you just keep feeding it packs of Happy Fuji and it's all good?
Yes. I haven't honestly looked into expanding all that much more. It's not to say that I wouldn't. It's that I'm afraid of what happens when I get a hold of new things and that it becomes consuming. I'm intentionally limiting it and just focusing on this particular kind of camera and this particular format until I feel like the project is exhausted, and then we'll see what's next.
With your old Polaroids that you're feeding this Fuji stock into, are you using any kind of flash? Do you still have the little flash bulb attachment? Is it all just ambient light?
No flash, that's all ambient. And you said the camera, it's versatile with that particular film stock, a bunch of different lighting conditions. And even in real darkness, if you can hold stuff still, it'll give you a long shutter, which is nice.
Yeah, and I think it's what's so cool is you don't have to worry about spending $8,000 on a new digital body and all those lenses and all this stuff when you can find one of these.
$8,000 on Fuji film.
So you're buying the stuff by the case, I guess.
As I need it. The camera is $10 at the secondhand store, but each pack of film is now $12, so the film costs more than the camera.
Right, but the problem is, though, is I think you have the bug now, so it's one of these addictions that I guess it could be worse.
Right.
But you are making a very cool body of work, so it's hard to put a price on that.
No, thank you. I appreciate that.
And you think, too, if this wasn't digital, it would look like everybody else's stuff. So I think this is another way that Matt's photography stands out on top of other people's is because you are shooting this instant film. Using this really cool 3000 ISO Fuji stock, and it's got a unique look. It's got a unique contrast, and you're not seeing it pumped up on every website.
Right. That would be fantastic to find a client that wanted the piece done with this particular stock. Right now, it's personal. It'd be lovely to find somebody to fund it.
Yeah, that would be cool. I think if some of your editorial people, do they get to see your Polaroid work? I mean, I could see one of these magazines wanting to have a photographic essay done on these Polaroids. And this would be, I think, really cool editorial-wise to reflect certain subject matters using the old Polaroid camera with this Fuji film. It's pretty cool.
Well, U.S. News just did a one portrait piece with it. That's truly the only magazine that's run it. And there's so many different ways to use it. I mean, I think about editorial-wise, the ability to shoot it as an essay because it makes things feel timeless and it has a different approach and a different feel than other stuff. May not feel would fit well into that, but also for nonprofits, for other commercial outlets, there's that avenue too. It's unique enough that people stop on it, and that's really what our market is as photographers. We're selling a product that's designed to get people to stop and to go further and to read more and to understand more, whether it's journalism, whether it's advertising, whether it's something commercial, an annual report, whatever it is. The idea of the photography is that somebody needs to stop, look at the image, be curious enough to read a little bit more about it, and hopefully educate themselves to whatever else it is. And this format, to me, is unique enough that if you present something that's modern in this format, people stop, and it accomplishes that goal, editorial or commercial.
This latest portrait that you did for U.S. News and Report, what issue of the magazine did it run in, or do you know when it's going to run?
Just ran its August education issue. And so the article feature was about the DREAM Act, which is an ability for children of undocumented immigrants, so undocumented children who've gone to an American high school, speak English, they're functionally American for all intents and purposes, who've graduated to be able to either go to military service or go to college and pursue a path to residency, which is then a path towards citizenship. As of right now, 65,000 students a year graduate from high schools here, and they're just stuck. They can't go back to whatever country they came from because that's a place they don't remember. They don't have documents here. They can't go on to college. Can't go into military service. They're just stuck. And so the portrait was of a young woman here in Colorado who's in exactly that position. Really bright girl who graduated from high school here and is in a holding pattern. So the DREAM Act comes in front of the Senate and comes in front of the House, and if they pass it, then there's somewhere for her to go now, as opposed to what we're doing to 65,000 folks a year. But that's another radio program.
It's great to see. I mean, how long has it been since a national editorial magazine ran an instant photo in their book?
Yeah, well, credit to their editorial staff, huh?
Yeah, great to them, and a great photograph by you. What are you going to say? Cool stuff.
Thank you.
So, Matt, tell us where we get more information about yourself, your photography, where they can look at all this great stuff you have going. I know your archives are up, and you can just look at this great instant photography and, of course, the other stuff you're up to.
The piece that I'm working on right now that I'm most interested in and most passionate about is Luceo Images, which, again, is a cooperative of young photographers who are working together sort of to tackle the new marketplace and to develop a product and an approach that's unique, sort of fitting to the digital era, which is part of where a lot of places seem to have gone south, ignoring things like eBay and Craigslist and letting their ad revenues decline. And now we're seeing newspapers and magazines start to go away. So we're working on developing a new model and a new approach to selling images in an era where perhaps our market may not be exclusively editorial, but there may be several different ways to go. And so we team up and work together on those issues and market together and brand together. So that website is luceoimages.com, and there's more information there. And it's in for a second incarnation coming up this fall, which will be a more comprehensive website with blog and portfolios and a commercial section and downloadable archive. Right now, it's just features and portfolios. Second place would be my own website. Again, that's mattslaby.com. And through that website, there's a portal to other pieces. So there's a blog that you can access from the splash page, which I update 3 or 4 times a week, depending. If it's a busy week, might only get hit once. And a stock archive that's also available through the same site.
But it's great stuff, and I really do appreciate you joining us. It's very cool to see that you're creating this great photography, that you're still using the analog process. You're making this beautiful instant photography with the Polaroid and the Fuji stock. And I think this is just very cool, and I think it's just good, and it's great to show other people what you can do with this material and this beautiful work that you're doing. So I do appreciate Matt joining us today, talking about what you've been doing and what you're moving on and working on going forward. This is great stuff, buddy.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, there you go. Matt Slaby. Beautiful work going on with Matt. Very cool to see him lugging that old Polaroid around, shooting the Fuji Instant Film. You know, just great to be on these editorial shoots, the campaign trails, to pull out this old Polaroid and pop off some of this high-speed black and white Fuji film. It's pretty cool stuff going on. Definitely check out Matt's website, Beautiful Photography. The Inside Analog Photography radio program is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful over at www.fujifilmusa.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 over at www.dr5.com. Iger Studios over at igerstudios.com. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. And of course, our media partners, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, over at www.apug.org. Our photography philanthropy partners, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.geh.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photography Radio. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.